we see everyone, not only different body shapes, but people with disabilities, people who've lost appendages, people who've come back from the military, you know, whatever it is. We've had blind people do our course. It's super inspiring to see such a diverse group of people all go to tackle kind of one goal.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for joining me for the latest episode of the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast. So last week, we talked to Pete McGill, who is the author of Born Again Runner, who gave us probably a year's worth of running insights and tips within an incredibly short amount of time. If you are a newer runner, that episode is a must for you. So I told you a while ago that I was going to have a unique events podcast, but some life events of mine kind of pushed that to the side. But today we are finally getting to it, and it was really worth waiting for. So we're going to be talking about a different type of running today. Not your traditional 5K, 10K, or even marathon running. But no, those events that challenge you in a different way. And by the way, I'm not talking about a Krispy Kreme race, although we do actually discuss that in the interview. We're going to be talking about the Warrior Dash, other obstacle races, and team relays over 200 miles of the beautiful Kentucky countryside, which has a little place in my heart, in case you didn't guess, and also where you can go to find a cool event near you. We know runners love a challenge, and we're always looking for something new to see what we're really made of. As you probably know, I'm a pretty typical runner with the races I choose to do, but I found this chat so much fun, and yes, it has tempted me to do one of these races. So I just want to give you a warning, this episode is a little bit more relaxed and kind of conversational than usual, including one of my guests, Matt, who kind of made fun of me mid-podcast. If you're more of a serious question and answer style person, this may not be for you, but I hope you will take a listen and let me know what you think, even if it's just because you want to have a laugh at me. So we're just going to have a quick word from our sponsors, and then we'll get right to the episode. Hydrate naturally by adding EnduroPEX electrolyte spray to any drink. EnduroPEX has zero calories, no sugar, no sweeteners or artificial ingredients. Yep, you heard that right. Just the electrolytes you need. Visit EnduroPEX.com and listen out later in the show for a coupon for 10% off. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, guys.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you
so
for having us.
We have three people here, so this is going to be a little bit different. We have had one of these before in the past, and it worked very well, so hopefully it will again. So today we have John, who is from the race director of the Bourbon Chase. We have Terry, who is the construction manager. Sorry, I should have written this down when you said it a minute ago. Tell me again.
Head of construction and obstacle design.
Head of construction and obstacle design. See, that's quite a long title anyway. It would have been hard for me to remember. Of Warrior Dash. And we have Matt Davis, who is the co-founder of Obstacle Racing Media. So because you are all from, you know, non-traditional running events, I thought it'd be kind of fun to do something a bit different. So to kind of get everyone to relax a little bit and to kind of bring a bit of fun to this to start with, as this is about having fun with running. I'm going to ask you guys a question, and I want you to each answer this. All right. So if you were at a friend's house for dinner and you found a dead insect in your food, what would you do? So Terry, I'm going to start with you.
Oh man. How good of a friend. I would probably put it off to the side and just keep eating.
Okay. Matt?
I don't think I would be shy. I mean, I guess, you know what? I mean, if it was like the dude was my friend and it was his wife, I don't know that I want to put his wife on blast. But, you know, if I knew the man or woman really well, I think I'd have to be like, I don't think I could hide it.
So what would you say?
There's an insect in my food.
In that accent?
In my horrible British accent, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, any friends of yours listening, they're going to be inspecting their food, making sure that they don't. That doesn't happen for two reasons there. And John, what do you think you would do?
Well, this is a strange answer, I'm sure, but I think it depends on what the insect is. Meaning cockroach or fly, I think I would have to say something or just set it aside and not eat. If it's just like a little gnat, I'd probably just eat it.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'd be kind of concerned if you were inspecting your food that much to see a gnat. I'm sure, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like I would just think that was a bit of pepper or something. But anyway, that question worked exactly how I kind of hoped it would. So kind of makes everyone a bit more like, you know, we've seen a bit of insight into who you really are. All right. So firstly, I just want to kind of ask each of you about, you know, your running background, whether you were, you know, did you start the typical runner route of, you know, picking up running and just doing 5Ks and doing 10Ks and a marathon and then kind of looking for a new challenge? Or did you come into it from a different angle to most runners? So maybe this time, John, we'll start with you.
Sure. I actually started running, I guess, as a 14-year-old in high school, track and cross country. I was a walk-on at a Division I school. Mm-hmm. Looking back on it, probably, you know, was very far back in the pack. I'll put it that way. I wasn't really competitive at the collegiate level. As an adult, I did coach some, and my two boys are runners as well, and one still currently runs at Georgetown University in D.C. on the team there.
Cool. Okay, cool. All right, great. All right, what about you, Matt?
I tell most people I was your average softball-playing dad, so mm-hmm. that was about as much exercise as I got was in our little softball league. And then I signed up for a Tough Mudder in the fall of 2011, and that got me running. And then, unlike most people in the obstacle world, I actually really enjoy running. A lot of the obstacle people hate the running part of these races, which is like silly to me because it's a race. But yeah, I just, so, you know, 4.5 years ago, started running, read Born to Run, and, you know, I really haven't stopped since.
Okay. So you do run like traditional running events as well?
I do. I mean, not a lot, mostly in the winter, right? Turkey trots, that kind of stuff. And sometimes we'll do wacky stuff, like a bunch of obstacle racers will sign up for a 5K and we'll carry tires or something wacky like that. But yeah, there's some good trail races around here. I'll do those. I've done a couple halves. But yeah, I like to mix it up.
Cool. Okay. And Terry?
Yeah. I mean, my background's in architecture, and so I wasn't always the most athletic kind of person growing up. But through school, handling a lot of the stress and things like that, I got into running to decompress, so not really like the mileage or that kind of thing. So that's kind of how I got into the running space. But from there, I kind of went the traditional route. I started with 5Ks, 10Ks. Then once I got into the event industry, being around super athletic, competitive people kind of pushed me to do marathons, halves, done an ultra. So it's kind of grown from there and become a huge part of my life, just being in the space that we're all in.
Mm-hmm. And so either Matt or Terry, have you seen that do most people tend to come from that, you know, similar to you guys, start running and then slowly work, you know, kind of spread out a little bit with what you do? Or do you get some people who literally their first race ever or first running event ever is some kind of obstacle event?
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt maybe has a different perspective, but from my perspective of it, the industry is so broad and it's such a diverse group of people that come out to do it. So yeah, some people are definitely the traditional runners who want to throw obstacles and that kind of thing into it. I think on the other side, the fitness industry in general has gotten so diverse with CrossFit blowing up and cycling and all different elements to it. So I think some people come from the more lifting obstacle style background and then add the running into it too. So you see it from all angles. From my experience.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. The thing I would add, though, is that it does seem, we definitely see a lot of the, you know, people who are, you know, couch to 5K would be an understatement. They're really overweight. They do a race or two, and it changes their life. And it's mostly, I think, the people, right? Like, it's not just the race itself. It's that they met this community of welcoming people that didn't look at them sideways when they showed up, clearly not looking, you know, like a cover model, and they were accepted, and so they were able to stick around. And some of them, honestly, don't necessarily even improve that much in terms of, we scared them away. Some of them don't even improve that much necessarily. Like, they never become, like, you know, what do you call it, Biggest Loser type weight differences, but they just, they found a new, you know, a new lease on life.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what is it about, do you think that is the big part of it? With, you know, there's no judging, that it's kind of like you're out there and, you know, you're all kind of just having fun together, or, you know, chasing this challenge together rather than typical traditional running, which is a bit more, I don't want to say vain, but maybe a bit more, you know, materialistic and very, you know, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Is that how you see the reason you see a lot of people who, like you said, aren't traditional runner looking bodies kind of coming to these events?
Well, you know, let's take the Warrior Dash, right? Since we have him here, right? Warrior Dash, almost everybody's first race, right? Yep. And it's not, they're not showing these videos of like the race designed to kick your ass, right? But it's still something a lot of these people have never done, right? Mm-hmm. A, they've never run 3 miles, or not since high school. Or B, you know, going up a cargo A-frame is pretty high, and they go up it and they do it, and they do get that sense of accomplishment afterwards. And they're like, holy cow, I didn't think I could do that. And I also happen to have a bunch of fun with my friends in the mud, and we all drank afterwards. But I think it is facing obstacles that they didn't think they could do, or that they certainly hadn't done. You know, the guy's like, man, I did this in the military, but that was 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think stemming off of what Matt said, from my experience doing traditional runs, there's definitely, the running community is fantastic and awesome, but the support that you get when you're doing a traditional run, it's very independent. It's your accomplishment, you know, and someone can pat you on the back or say, are you doing good? Like, I'll help pace you. But from watching people do these obstacles and coming in, and just the camaraderie at our event, all these events, and the diverse group of people, it's so much more, I guess, like communal, and it has such a bigger impact, you know, with the groups of people running and helping everyone through. And you can literally help lift someone over something if you need to. Mm-hmm. And we see everyone, not only different body shapes, but people with disabilities, people who've lost appendages, people who've come back from the military, you know, whatever it is. We've had blind people do our course. It's super inspiring to see such a diverse group of people all go to tackle kind of one goal.
Absolutely. Well, that's really cool. And thanks for sharing that. And then, John, what about you? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought, from what I've kind of heard, living in Kentucky, a lot of people that do the Bourbon Chase are not runners, or have not traditionally been runners, nor do they plan on doing any other races. But this is kind of almost like a rite of passage. You have to be part of one of these teams. Do you see a lot of people who aren't, you know, traditional runners?
I think there is a fair amount of our participants that aren't traditional runners. And it's because of the nature of our event. It is attractive. I think very much like the Warrior Dash and non-traditional type races, it offers something a little different in terms of experience versus a 5K or a 10K. And I think that does attract people who are not the traditional runner type. I'm not sure how many of our people, you know, it is their first running race, but certainly there's probably a fair number that have heard from a friend or read about the race, and they want to get involved because it sounds like a, you know, an interesting thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it attracts, you know, people that are outside that normal running community, certainly.
Okay. All right. And then, so do you want to maybe explain or kind of learn a bit, dive a bit more into what each of you do? So, John, maybe if you start with the Bourbon Chase, you know, 200-mile relay I have mentioned, but is it on road or is it on trails? Like, what is, tell us about what it is.
It is almost entirely on the road, and it is a 200-mile team relay. So the typical team has 12 runners. Each runner runs 3 different times. So the if you're not familiar with this overnight relay concept, the team of 12 will typically be in 2 different vans. So runners 1 through 6 are in van 1, runners 7 through 12 are in van 2. And as those first 6 runners run their respective legs, the van drives ahead to the next exchange point, picks up the runner that just finished, drops off the runner that's getting ready to start. At the number 6 exchange, van 2 takes over, and those vans leapfrog each other along the course. it doesn't stop. The fastest teams typically do this in about 19 hours. Slowest teams around 34, 35 hours. So it gets very spread out, as you can imagine. We do, by the way, spread out the start so that as the race goes on, the runners contract, if you will, so that our finish line doesn't last 16 hours. That's the concept. From a running standpoint, I would say that if you can do a half marathon, you can do an overnight relay. Each runner does run about 16 miles, but that is split up into three different runs, but it is done really over a period of that, 20 to 35 hour time frame. So it does get tough after a while.
Mm-hmm. And what is the attraction for, I know that there's quite a few of these overnight relays. I know there was one in Michigan where I used to live, the Great Lakes Relay. But to me, I always thought of the lack of sleep, the sleeping in vans. How does this sleeping situation work with the vans and kind of, is it just you catch a nap while other people are running, or is it people go in a hotel, or how does that work?
Well, a little bit of both, actually. So as I just described, when your van, if you're on a team and your van is the off van, meaning the other one is active at that time, you have about 5 hours of downtime. So during that time, you can grab a bite to eat, you can stop somewhere and nap, et cetera. We do have campsites along the way, so a lot of vans will stop when they're not the active van and catch some sleep there. There are hotels along the way. Our exchange point, which is the halfway point, so our number 18 exchange, is actually at a hotel. So it's always booked, as you can imagine, from people wanting to actually sleep on a bed versus the van or the ground. It's catch sleep when you can. That's part of the experience.
Okay. And I have to ask you, we will come back to you in a few minutes, but the question probably everyone is asking, how is bourbon involved in this? Do we drink bourbon along the way, or how does this work?
Well, we actually prohibit alcohol consumption during the event. But we do run through six bourbon distilleries on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. So the runners get to see those, take a tour if they have time. At the end, at our finish line celebration, we do give a complimentary bourbon tasting to all participants.
Is that all the bourbon from all the distilleries, or is that just one?
That is the six distilleries that we run through, plus on occasion a smaller craft distillery may be a part of that as well.
Do you get samples of each of the six? So you could potentially be pretty drunk by the end of this tasting.
we limit the tasting to four tastings.
Okay.
So of the six to eight distilleries that are there, you get your choice of four.
Okay. Although I think if I had four, I'd still be pretty far gone there. But but anyway, good to know. All right. So Matt, let's kind of talk a bit more about OCR. Maybe you could share with us kind of what you do. About the race reviews, your on-location reporting, your podcast, what goes into obstacle racing media and, what you do to help with the running world.
Sure. So I started, honestly, as it seemed like a fun idea for me. I had done, one of each of the big three. I'd done a Warrior Dash, I'd done a Tough Mudder, I'd done a Spartan, and I thought, this seems like fun. Maybe I should do a podcast about it. I mean, honestly, it was really that simple. I'd been up to Vermont to something called the Death Race, and was really inspired by those people. And I liked podcasts, and there had been a Spartan podcast that was just about Spartan, but there wasn't any about our industry. And we really, it's like, even now, I still try to remind people how young we are. And as much as happened in 5-6 years, we're still if you look at a sport like triathlon, right? Like when you've got 30 years experience, a lot, you learn a shitload, right? And things happen with, organizations and associations and rules and laws and all that stuff. And we're so new. So back then it just seemed like a fun idea to me, to do that. And 100 other people, I started blogging. The difference was I just kind of stuck with it. And because I was the first one, I just sort of kind of became that guy, he's the guy with the obstacle podcast. So I got to know people well, the race directors, the people who do the race, and I think I'm pretty good at it, but I also just think being first helps a lot, and it's kind of grown from there. So now we really pride ourselves on consistent, original, unique, quality content. That's really the name of our game. That's kind of like what I preach all the time. So that's race reviews, that's videos. The podcast is the most fun for me. It's probably still the least, like the least consumed. Many more people read a blog than listen to a podcast. But the people who do listen to the podcast are some of the most loyal. I mean, you've got to be kind of a dork about this stuff to want to hear from guys like Joe DeSena on a regular basis. Or, you know, I actually finally talked to your boss, dude. after like 5 or 6 years, I guess we got big enough that we got the phone call return. So I'm looking forward to playing that interview. But I think the other thing is that people say, Matt, the reason I like it is because you aren't just talking about it, you're really doing it. And to me, it's like, well, of course, why else would I do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why else produce this content if I didn't really love this stuff? And I do. So that's does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's how it kind of should be, you know. We actually, just running in general, a lot of us tend to get wrapped up in having to do this or having to finish there or having to complete that. But at the end of the day, it is about what you enjoy and what you love. So that's nice to hear, and that's how it should be. And something, you know, Matt and I have gone back and forth for, I don't know, 6 months now, kind of talking. And, you know, you said to me the other day about kind of a big event that happened, if you want to call it an event. So I just wanted to ask your opinion recently Battle Frog cancelled all their events. So just wanted to hear your thoughts on that and, you know, what you think this means for the obstacle racing world.
Yeah, so Battle Frog came in 2 years ago and were backed by, as far as we knew, a billionaire with a B. And they said, this guy's just going to spend a bunch of money and try to compete at Spartan's level. And they did a lot of things right. But then as time went on, kind of more and more decisions seemed to be honestly just not based in reality. So, you know, they famously sponsored a bowl game. What does college football fans like necessarily have to do with obstacle racing? Like, would it bring some awareness? Sure. Would it bring long-term value? Probably not. We've been, you know, I follow this industry really closely because it's my job to, and because I'm personally invested in it. And I knew they were getting somewhere around 1,000 people per race, which is, you know, for some people's local 5K would be phenomenal. For a touring production with the amount of expenditure they've had on all this marketing and just the races themselves, we knew it wasn't long term. So how long before Daddy Warbucks just turned off the light? And 2 days ago, he decided to turn off the light.
Yeah. And just in comparison, how many people would you get a typical Warrior Dash, Terry?
We'd probably average around 7,000 to 12,000 runners for each one of our races.
Okay. Yeah. So that, you know, like you said, you could kind of see it coming, Matt, with, you know, the things that were happening. And you don't think this says anything about, you know, the trend of obstacle racing or anything. This is just, you know, a bit of some bad decisions on their part.
Yeah. I mean, and I've talked about this a lot because there's certainly the boom that happened in 2012, 2013 was amazing. And I know that Warrior Dash and Tough Mudder, for example, were doing these massive 2-day events, and we may never get back to that. And that's fine. For Warrior Dash and Spartan is 4,000 people, a bad day, a really bad day.
Right.
So the numbers I look at are showing a slight uptick across the industry, flat for some, slightly up in others. That includes like some mom and pops as well, not just these guys. So yeah, I think you had people making corporate decisions that were honestly just not based in reality. I mean, I don't want to like, you know, kick on somebody's grave, but no. They just, a lot of people saw it coming. That's probably the easiest way I could say it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what, I mean, I'd really be curious though, what Terry thinks.
Go on then, Terry.
I mean, from our perspective, it's clear that they wanted to restructure to be kind of a media company and that kind of thing. And they're exiting the space. It's just with them reshuffling and repositioning. So, I mean, for the industry, I think the industry is still really strong, kind of like what Matt's saying. We're having a super positive 2016 year from, you know, coming off of a few years back when kind of the industry was bubbling and then it burst. And, you know, so like Matt said, I completely agree that the industry as itself has had a pretty good uptick moving forward post that bubble bursting. And Battle Frog just reshifting, I don't think really is any sign of anything in our industry or our space. I think all of our brands are really strong. That's kind of really it.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know. And thanks for your feedback on that. So then for anyone who is listening who hasn't heard of a Warrior Dash, do you want to tell us exactly what it is and why someone would want to, you know, do this?
Yeah, for sure. So Warrior Dash is a 5-day obstacle race, very much kind of trail running. It's a mud run. You conquer 12 obstacles over that 3.1 miles. It's a series, so we had 26 events this year. We've got 6 left for the year this year, and we'll probably have roughly the same amount moving into 2017. We definitely have some stable obstacles. We always end with our mud pit. We have an obstacle called Goliath, which is a 20-foot tall by 30-foot long water slide that you end with. So pretty fun, pretty exciting. Definitely takes you out of kind of your daily normal life. That's kind of our goal, is to create a fun, challenging event that gets you out of the norm, challenges you with some kind of unique things. My big thing designing obstacles is trying to create stuff that you can't mimic in a gym. So train as much as you want, that kind of thing, but definitely want to throw you out of your comfort zone, whether it's playing off of fears, playing off of heights, create something tough, challenging, and that kind of thing. But yeah, we've been around since 2009, so kind of one of the first brands in the industry. We're going into, or this will be our 8th season, and we partner with St. Jude, which is a big part of our brand and what we do. So thus far, we've raised $13.5 million for St. Jude and the children of St. Jude. So that's kind of a huge part of the brand as well, is giving people a great, awesome event, but trying to give back and do something better for the children of St. Jude.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I will put links in the show notes to, you know, all of your websites and all of your information. But I do encourage people to go check out the video that you have, Terry, on the website of the Warrior Dash and kind of what it is, to kind of really get a feel for it. So then with you designing the obstacles, like how do you... You said that, you know, obviously you try to make things that can't be mimicked in a gym, but is this the kind of thing that you're like, you know, in the shower and something comes to you? Or is it kind of like... you sit there for hours and think, how can I make this tough without making it impossible?
You know, people ask me that question all the time. And I think just coming from a creative background, you never know what's going to hit you. I think a lot of it is just getting exposure to a lot of different, whether it be races or industries. The more that I know about what people love and what's going on in the space, the better I can do my job. So I have to put myself into a lot of sometimes uncomfortable situations for myself that... Mm-hmm. Just to kind of get to know what people are doing and, you know, what's exciting. But yeah, I get inspired by everything. And, you know, whether it's riding my bike on the lakefront path here in Chicago and seeing people do weird exercises, to just walking around and seeing buildings and being, you know, deconstructing them and saying like, oh, you could jump from there to there and do this. And so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's very much a keeping up with the Joneses, like what's going to be the next thing to hit. What's going to be the next exciting thing, and trying to create something fun, exciting that for our brand, I don't care if it takes you a second or 20 minutes to accomplish the obstacle. We want to make sure that you can somehow get over it, whether it's teamwork or, you know, whatever the fashion may be. But we definitely want to design something challenging for, you know, our elite athletes and that kind of thing, but capable enough that anyone can do it so that they can get that kind of accomplishment.
Okay.
I have a question. When your season sort of ends, like in October,
yeah,
do you give yourself, or does the team say like, okay, we must do at least 2 obstacles next year, or let's just see what we think of, or how does that usually go?
We actually do surveys after every race to get people's feedback on what they really liked, what they hated. So a lot of it comes from the feedback of the runners. So what do you want to see more of? The obvious answer is they want more water, they want more mud, always. So we get it. We're trying our best. So we pretty much do like a brand audit from the creative side of what's been around for a few years, what's kind of outdated, what do we want to reinvent, what do we want to completely nix? And it's a mix of it all. You know, we want to come up with some new, crazier stuff year to year. We also want to build and improve upon, you know, the obstacles that we had that worked, but maybe have been a little bit static. So it's kind of the process we take with our brand audit every year. But the fun thing about Warrior Dash and it being a series is it's never over. So, you know, we'll always test out new things and we'll rotate stuff in. You know, backups at our race are something that we hate. We hate seeing obstacle backups. So if we can create something to try to fix those so that people have a smoother run, that's always a huge goal of ours. So being that it's a series, we get 26 shots at making it right every year and we can just kind of roll in new stuff as we go. which we do a lot of times, but kind of like what Matt said, definitely at the end of the season is our big push to create something new and create some buzz for the season to come.
Yeah, and I'm guessing people in, you know, the people that don't do the Warrior Dash, they're not quite as type A and high maintenance as your typical runners, who, myself included, who like things to be in a particular order. I guess you get a bit more freedom to kind of be like, oh, our bad. And people are like, oh, cool, that's fine. Like, if something didn't work, is that the kind of how it works? Or
no, you would think so, but no. I mean, you'll always have opinionated people, which we love, because we love feedback and we want to do the best we can for everybody. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, people definitely don't hold back in letting us know what they love to see change and improved and what they liked, what they didn't like. But I think too, because we have such a broad demo, it makes my job so much harder, because I'm designing something for someone who might be 5'1", 200 pounds, and I'm designing someone who's 6'2", and just a lean, mean, like CrossFit person. Mm-hmm. And how do you create something that both people can do and enjoy? That's the biggest challenge for what I do.
Yeah, I'm sure. And do you think things like America's, I can't remember the name of it, Ninja Warrior or whatever
Ninja
it is,
Warrior.
And Wipeout, have those had any kind of impact, well, either Matt or Terry, on the amount of people that sign up for this? Have those played a part?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely, you know, Wipeout is a little bit goofier, more fun, but there's so many things that are happening on the TV these days and broadcast to mainstream the industry. I mean, I think those were the first that kind of brought obstacles and like the racing style a little bit more mainstream. But now, you know, you've got other brands on TV, and it's definitely, in my opinion, becoming a lot more mainstream and kind of a day-to-day kind of interaction type thing.
Okay.
I mean, and that's the other thing about answering the question about where are we going is, it feels like these brands are finally, and these networks finally, like, okay, I guess this thing isn't going away. So, you know, Tough Mudder just got a show. I mean, I'm guessing they've been offered something in the past. Maybe they never got quite the right offer, but I think that's huge. That Tough Mudder is actually a competitive series, and their whole thing has always been, we're not going to time anybody except for once a year. And I can tell you personally, you know, we've grown, ORM has grown. So I don't think we would be getting more advertiser dollars than we did last year if this thing wasn't going in the right, you know, sort of direction. I'm curious for John. John, how many years have you been doing your race, and what are your attendance numbers up? Are they static?
This is our 8th year.
Oh, wow.
We have grown each year. It's been controlled. Year one was 125 teams. And grown steadily, we have 450 this year. We have
that's a big event, dude.
Yeah, that's 900 bands and you know, over 5,400 runners total. And you know, we're somewhat constrained by the infrastructure of the roads that we run on. If you've never driven through central Kentucky, trust me, the roads are narrow and not many places. You know, with our event, you know, we have 35 exchange points along the 200-mile course, and at some of those, there has to be parking for, you know, 100 to 120 vans, and it's not easy to find places to do that. Plus, because we run through the bourbon distilleries, we just can't decide, well, let's go on, you know, this highway instead of another, because that doesn't take you where you need to go. So we are limited, and I'm not sure what the limit is on how many teams we can eventually take, but I would say we're approaching that. But who knows? You know, maybe with some road construction and a little creativity, we can continue to grow. But it's tough. It's tough to find ways to grow the event at this point.
Yeah. And thank you for the question, Matt. I can tell you're a podcast host as well, because your mind is like churning. This is good. It's good. I'm not saying that in a bad way. Okay, so John, for someone who is living in Kentucky and, you know, they're thinking, or maybe in, you know, a nearby state or even further out and thinking, oh, you know, this might be something kind of fun. What is it about this event and, you know, about running in a team, being part of a team, that makes this so unique for people who kind of think, you know, running is so individual and running is just for me? So why should they consider this event rather than just keeping going with their own, you know, running accomplishments?
I believe, and this applies to Warrior Dash as well, I'm sure, we are not we're selling an experience, not a typical 5K or 10K run. And I think that is the overall attraction. We do, by the way, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've tracked it. We have participants from, I think we've had a participant from every state except for Vermont, and several countries. So, and more than half of our participants come from outside Kentucky, by the way. So we do have a lot of people that come in. It's almost a tourist event in some way. But to answer your question more directly, it is an experience. It is a part road trip, if you will. You're spending, more than 24 hours in a van with five other people and a driver. Some of these people may be your best friends from your college days, or maybe you joined a team, they're all strangers. So, what we find is that after the event, the discussions are not so much, leg 16 really tough. It was more of, oh, do you remember when, Joe did this in the van type thing? It's those type of war stories. So we find that the experience total in total is what's attractive. Mm-hmm. It's a trial. It's an endurance. It's lack of sleep. It's an athletic event. It's all those things rolled up together. Plus beautiful scenery and bourbon.
What more do you need? And this is from someone who doesn't really even drink bourbon. I guess I do sometimes, but it's a bit too weak for it. All right, guys. So I'm just going to ask you about these events in general. Sorry, the echoing there was kind of putting me off for a second. What is it about these kind of events, us putting ourselves in situations that are not the typical runner experience? I mean, John kind of talked about it a little bit there, but maybe Matt or Terry, about this putting yourself in a state of discomfort, diving into mud. I mean, running up over something that's going to make your legs burn and hurt the next day. What is it about, putting yourself in a state of discomfort that is so, enjoyable and attractive for us? Is it because we live this comfortable life most of the time? We want something like that? Or is it just certain kind of people are always seeking challenges?
I think every person has their own goal or their own drive, of what's motivating them to do it. And I think a big draw of it is, you are kind of stuck in this method lifestyle, especially as we get older. We all have jobs. We have cool jobs, which is really great. but, we still have these 9-to-5s, and it gets harder and harder to carve time out to be able to do fitness things and really take care of yourself. And I think it's just, you see all these people, doing it for the Facebook picture and trying to show them that they went out and did this crazy, absurd thing. But I think we just strive for challenges. Anyone who's grown up being an athlete or anyone who's, trying to do something, new or athletic, I think you eventually tap out and you want to try to do something bigger, better, different. And I think this just gives them an outlet to do something a lot different. There's not a lot of adult obstacle courses in my backyard currently, but I can take an hour drive, go out to the country, and run some crazy event. I think the other part of it too, from our perspective of it, is we try to place our events near cities, maybe an hour to 2 hours outside of major cities, pulling a lot of the demo from those cities. But here in Chicago, when I go to our Illinois race, I can't mimic the trail run and that kind of course and the running through rivers and water and mud, in my day-to-day thing. But that's the stuff that I really enjoy. I love being outside. I love doing that. So I think it's a mixture of a lot of things, I think. But I think most people just strive to try to get a new experience or just do something different than their typical studio class or CrossFit class or cycling class or whatever it may be.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Anything you want to add, Matt?
Yeah, I think for those of us that have been at this, the trajectory actually sort of seems to be really interesting. So we get into these things, and then it becomes first just doing them is the thing, right? Oh my gosh, I can't believe I did it. And then it's like, you know what? I think I'd like to conquer those monkey bars. So let me maybe add some more fitness to my thing. Let me start doing some speed work. And then a bunch of races where we try to place in our age group, whatever it is. And then after a while, it's like, okay, this is really fun. And I think I just want to focus on that. And so then it becomes about maybe I do it for time, half the time, Or maybe I just do it with friends. I get people from my office. It's very common for people to run in the morning for time. And then in the afternoon, I'm taking my mom through her first race. I'm taking my boss through his first race. And then that's what reconnects, I'm going to say, us and me to it. You know, block your ears. I don't want to mention one of your competitors. But at a recent Tough Mudder, you know, they've got that big half pipe. And there was, you know, we're all doing it. And then there was this one woman who clearly, like, not even close, right? There's no way she could even get close. And so, you know, we went down and built a pyramid for her to go up. And like, I mean, come on. It was like made her day. Their friend, they're all hugging and high-fiving. And, you know, I'll remember that for a while. She'll remember that for a while. And it kind of gets me back in touch with why I do this, right? Whereas if I'm just running to see how fast I can do it every time, I may not experience that. By the way, quick plug, by the way, there's a movie out called Rise of the Sufferfest.
Okay.
Yes, please link it. They actually go, I think on iTunes starting the first, you can pre-order now. I don't know when this episode goes up, but please link Rise of the Sufferfest. It asks a lot of these questions. They ask a lot of people who've written some cool books and great thinkers and guys like Tim Ferriss and Morgan Spurlock. Are you looking to see what time it is?
No, I was looking to see my calendar.
Anyhow, Rise of the Sufferfest, it asks all these great questions. So I think it's all of it. It's pushing ourselves, it's helping others, it's community, it's camaraderie, it's playing in the mud like you're seven. I think it's all of it.
Okay, cool. I would definitely put a plug to that. And no, I was not looking at the clock. I would be like tapping my wrist if I was like, all right,
come
wrap
on,
it up.
Dude.
No. That was good. Yapping. And I will put a link in the show notes, which I guess I should mention right now, at runnersconnect.net/RC126. But no, that was good to hear about and definitely put a link to that. So then I don't know who wants to answer this one. Maybe I'll get a bit of feedback from all of you. Any thoughts on kind of the direction we're going in the future? Like, are we going to see, you know, an ultra obstacle race where it's like a, you know, like basically combining what we have here with this John's Bourbon Chase with some kind of like, you know, serious race? Or is that kind of what trail running is kind of moving towards? Or are there going to be any unique events? Anyone have any thoughts on where we kind of see things going with this you know, broad area of running now? I guess maybe we can start with John. Give you the hard part.
I feel just related to what I said before about the experience. I think there will be some evolution forward, and the trick is to offer people an experience that is attractive to them. I mean, when I explain to people who aren't runners at all and who don't participate in these types of events, I explain that for our demographic, you know, people, you know, they're tired of going to the beach for, you know, a half week or what have you. You know, those things aren't as exciting for people when they're, you know, when they get into their 40s and 50s, they've been there and done that. So they're looking for something new. They're looking for something, you know, I think we are a more fit society than what we were 20 years ago. I think that plays into all this as well. You know, I'd say our average age is probably mid-40s for our event. So probably a little older than the obstacle courses and a typical run. And, you know, I think the challenge is coming up with new experiences that are unique, that can attract people to these events. And what that looks like, I'm not sure. But I do think that you know, Terry and Matt are on the right track in terms of coming up with these innovative, unique type experiences that you know, you can't repeat elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
How you grow it and where it goes in the future, I don't know. But I'm sure that they'll come up with something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another thing about my community is that, you honestly, if you've done 10 Warrior Dashes and 20 Spartans, you do kind of go, okay, what's next? And so many of us start doing ultra races because we know we like running on dirt and we know we like pushing ourselves. And hey, I've heard about this ultra thing, or I read Born to Run or whatever. So I know that a lot of folks have done the Ragnars. Again, I don't know if that's a dirty word for you, John, or if they're like your cousin.
They're more like a sibling.
So closer than a cousin?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. I'm definitely going to have you on my podcast because I do have 1,000 questions for you. But yeah, so like it's not necessarily just like, what's the biggest, hardest obstacle? I do think it is just like, hey, maybe I can run 50 miles and that had never occurred to someone before. Or can I run through the night, right? That kind of thing. We all want to predict the future, but none of us know it or we'd all be rich. So yeah, I think, again, it goes back to the ever-shaping thing. Like, again, like, you know, Warrior Dash tried a longer-distance race. They decided not to do it, right? I wish they'd bring it back. Maybe they will one day. But we're going to see what the audience wants as this thing sort of, you know, finds its way.
Okay. And Terry, what would you like to say back to that?
Yeah. Those were the good old days of the long-distance Warrior Dashes. Those were a little bit brutal on me and my crew, but they were fun. They were really fun. As for the space, though, I think Matt kind of hit it right on the head of, you know, the running space is definitely diversified over the last 5-6 years to, you know, events like John's that I've participated in, similar ones to, you know, and to doing ultras and being on, you know, doing normal road races to doing, you know, I've done all the other competitor races as well. And I think the biggest thing for our industry that's been really great is, you know, after we had a ton of people in the space and it shuffled out to, you know, kind of the big names still left, you know, we've kind of aligned and grown closer, and we have, you know, groups like the OCR World Championships that start to get all of our companies working together to, you know, put races on. And, you know, it's definitely becoming a tighter knit community. And I think once that can happen, sky's kind of the limit of, you know, how we can team up and work together and do bigger, crazier races. You know, other companies do bigger, crazier races, longer races. But I just think the running space and everything that has come up, you know, between our style of OCR events to the, you know, Bourbon Chase style van, relay, camaraderie. I mean, it all stems from the camaraderie and just the community in general. But I think we've been able to grow the running space so much in the last 5-6 years that, yeah, I think people are looking for the next big push. And all of us, you know, not just our space or John's space, but I think all of us try to push to create that new experience that people can tackle or get behind and really kind of challenge themselves with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. All right. So then I wanted to ask you guys your thoughts on some of the other running events, but I don't know if you'd really call them like competitive events, like the Zombie Run, Krispy Kreme, Color Run. Matt, I'm sure you're going to have something interesting to say about this. So any...
Well, there's, I think there's still some of that, this boom bust that Terry's referred to. There's still a lot of that in that sort of color zombie space where people think, hey, I can throw up an event right page and get rich. And unfortunately, there's some really poor quality ones of those. The Color Run, the one called the Color Run, I think they've always done really well and put on a good product. And it's one of those, hey, see, it's somebody's gateway. I mean, I don't necessarily know. I think Warrior Dash is the true gateway. I think everybody calls Warrior Dash the gateway drug. But I think sometimes it's just like it's something fun to do with their kids. And yep. They don't have to become fitness freaks. That's fine. But again, it's like instead of taking their kid to the movie and eating a bunch of candy, they took them to a Color Run and had a great day exercising. So, and again, I have no problem with, like, I would certainly do a donut run. The beer mile seems to be a very popular thing these days. Like, you know, I'm just, dude, try new things.
Yeah. John, have you, you should start creating a bourbon run of some kind. You have to like down, take a shot of bourbon, run a mile, take a shot of bourbon, see if you can stay standing.
I think liability insurance would be prohibited.
Actually, it's when I was talking to Chris McDougal, I've had him on the show a few times, a few months ago.
Oh, you name dropper.
Oh, no. I, everyone listening knows that I've had him on, and we have a good relationship. Thank you. Anyway, Chris was talking about how there's now a beer, like not a beer mile anymore, but a beer half marathon. Like taking, can any of you want to take that on and kind of be the guinea pig and try that and get back to us? Because to me, I can't even imagine. But any of you have any thoughts on that one? No, silence. You're punishing me for mentioning Chris.
If I get from breweries, I'll put it on. I don't get my own money.
Maybe 5-6 years ago, my body could have bounced back from something like that, but not anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to ask about that, because that, to me, just sounds way too intense and too far the other way. All right. So just to kind of wrap this up, we're just going to have the final kick round in a minute. But do you want to each kind of maybe give a little bit of something you want to mention that the listeners can go check out? I will put links in the show notes, but maybe, you know, John, yours is coming up very soon. You could mention about that. Terry, I'm not sure if you want to just kind of tell people to go to the website to look for their location. And then Matt, anything you have exciting that's coming up. So Terry, if we, I guess, start with you.
Yeah, cool. So we've got 6 events left in the season. You can kind of find everything at warrior-.com. We're launching 2017 events kind of on a rolling basis. We've got, you know, maybe 15 launch for next year with the goal of hopefully 26. But if you visit our website, warrior-.com, you can check out our video, check out the race. We've got obstacle photos and all that kind of stuff posted, so you can definitely learn more. And if you can't do one this year, sign up for one next year, and love to have you out at our course.
Cool. Thank you. Matt?
Yeah, and let's say you want to know, like, where can I do a Warrior Dash and a bunch of other races near me? You can go to obstacleracingmedia.com, where there's an awesome calendar. We have a big discount code page. I believe we have a $5 discount for the Warrior Dash. Sign up for that, right? And yeah, if you want content on race reviews, gear reviews, we do some great fun videos. We did actually a really cool one of your world championship, which is sadly gone. Talk about that later. But anyhow, yeah, so obstacleracingmedia.com. From there, we have links to everything. Also, you can follow all of our social channels. We're killing it on Snapchat these days. Follow us on Snapchat at obstaclemedia1.
Okay, cool. And John, what would you like to say about Bourbon Chase?
Well, as you mentioned, we're approaching the date. It's October 14th and 15th this year. Registration for 2017 will be in January. Look at our website for that type of information. We do typically have more demand than what we can, you know, accommodate. But we have a lottery system, and we try very hard to, you know, if you're a team from Alaska or Hawaii or California, you're getting in. We like these out of town teams. So it's a weighted lottery, I should say, not just random draw.
So because I'm British, does that mean I get an advantage even though I live in Lexington?
Well, since we know each other, I can get you then.
She also knows Chris McDougall.
Yes, in case you missed that earlier. Okay. I'm not going to get that one dropped, am I? I'm going to have to... I'm never going to let that one go. Okay.
I'm very jealous.
You're very jealous.
I'm very jealous.
Well, maybe I'll reach out to my faraway friends and see if I can get you in there. okay.
Listen, I'll get you into a free Warrior Dash.
Oh, thanks. I think that would be a stretch. Terry might not want to ever talk to me again after this one. Do not let this girl in, no matter what she says. Okay, I'm just going to take a minute to thank our sponsors, and then we'll be right back with the final kick.
For years, we were told we needed to be hydrated, drinking gallons of water before we ran. And not only did that mean needing to pee every 2 minutes, but it was incredibly dangerous for our health, as runners suffered from hyponatremia. Instep, the sugary, bright-colored syrups to save the day, right? Well, wrong, actually. Not only were they pumping us full of unnecessary sugar and calories we didn't want or need, but they are full of artificial ingredients. Blech. I've been using EnduroPax for years now, and I can honestly say this is the perfect solution to this problem. Just spray EnduroPax electrolytes into any drink and be on your way. It's flavorless, other than a slight lemony taste, of course. It has 0 calories, no sugar, no artificial ingredients, and will replenish your electrolytes in a matter of seconds. I love EnduroPax spray so much that during my marathons, I carry a bottle in my shorts and spray it directly into my mouth during the race. Visit EnduroPax.com for more information and use coupon code TINAMUA for 10% off.
Okay, and just the final kick round. So I do have 5 questions here, but as we, you know, I don't know how you guys are doing for time. I don't want to maybe give all of you all the questions because we might be waiting for a bit too long. So I'm going to give you all the choice of who wants to answer this first one, just because this is usually a pretty cool unique answer. So greatest advice you've ever received? Anyone specifically want to jump to that one?
My dad always told me, if you don't ask, you don't get.
That's good advice for sure. That works. And that was short. So I could guess the other, you two can also answer. So John? Thoughts?
Great advice. Happiness is not a destination, it's a way of traveling.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. Nice. And Terry?
I tried to pick something that was more running focused to me. So it was, your body is so much more capable of doing, sorry, let me start over. Your body is capable of doing so much more than your mind tells it you can.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, we actually, there was someone told me a little while ago that when you get to that point in a race where your body is saying, where your mind is saying, I can't do this, you're actually only at like 30% of what you're actually capable of achieving. So
yep.
Kind of matches along with that. And I'm going to let you all kind of give me your favorite running book or blog other than your own. I think I might actually know yours, Matt, because you've mentioned someone twice.
I'm not going to say. I'm going to pick another one then. I'm going to pick like Dean Karnazes's book just to.
So is that your answer?
I mean, it's. I hate to be so obvious. I mean, I haven't read a ton of running books, but that is the one that, you know, I hate to be that guy. But yeah, like. When that book came out, I got hooked like everybody did and was like, I want to run with these crazy Indian people.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I'd say probably a third of people that I have on this podcast say Born to Run. So it's a very popular choice. So I can see why. All right, Terry?
I went with the same tactic, Born to Run, but I picked a different book. Exactly like Matt said, I think Born to Run is like the runner's Bible that everyone gets into. But I just read Living with a Seal by Jesse Itzler.
Oh, yes.
Which is a short read and quick book, but it kind of fits our crazy industry and living crazy lifestyles and that kind of thing. So that was kind of a fun read.
Mm-hmm. I think actually Tawny Prazak, I don't know if you guys know who she is. She's the podcast host of Endurance Planet. She said that that's her favorite book as well. So, and she's not even in, you know, your industry, but she, I haven't read it yet, but she did say that was a good one. And John?
Okay. I believe it's called Run with the Champions, and it is a, it goes through the top, I believe it's the top 20 or 25 male and female distance runners, U.S. runners, and about four pages dedicated to each one, talks about their training and, you know, their achievements. So it's a, it can be a quick read or a long read, and it's just awesome.
Okay. So maybe one of those like coffee table books where you can kind of pick up, read a few chapters. Cool. Okay. All right. I'm just going to go, Terry, you can answer this one. What would you like to tell a new runner as you seem to have prepared for these questions?
Man, I think any new runner is, I would tell them just to kind of go at their own pace, not get intimidated by the race they're in, the people they see there, run their own race. You know, it's great if you have a team and you have that kind of support blanket, but don't get intimidated by who you see at races or that kind of thing, and just go out there and do the best you can. Keep a strong mind and just keep trucking.
That's good. You really have prepared yourself for this one. All right, Matt, what is your pre-race meal?
I read Tim Ferriss's book last year, the 4-Hour Workweek, and I have not read the entire 4-Hour Body, but I did get into the Slow Carb Breakfast, which is 3 eggs and some lentils and some salsa. However, I will say that a lot of times pre-race meal, I'm running later than I want to, so I grab a banana and a bar from the house.
That works too. All right. That was an interesting combination of foods, but I guess if it works for Tim Ferriss, why wouldn't it work for us? So thanks.
It's a heavy protein breakfast.
But it is. Although that makes me think my stomach would get upset with the lentils. It doesn't upset your stomach?
No, it honestly doesn't. I mean, you know, everybody's got their morning deal. And, you know, if you can go before you leave the house, that's always, you know, always better than the porta potty. That's the best I can say. Try to get that stuff done before. But, you know, when you have to get up for a race super early, you can't avoid it, right?
Yeah, very true. Very true. All right.
If you guys can start your races at like 10 instead of 8, it would be awesome.
There you go. Got some advice there. And anyone else listening who's got an event, this is what Matt's one request. All right, John, and I'm going to finish up with you. Favorite running product?
Favorite running product?
I sent you these questions, so we should have been like Terry here, who has notes written down.
You sent these to us?
I did. Matt, do you want to go for yours? What your favorite running product is?
I'll come back.
Give
a bonus round. Honestly, we just got, and I'm not saying this just because they're a new sponsor, because I got plenty of products that I don't necessarily mention on my own. These guys called Kitbricks, they're from England. They started for triathlons. And it's these really cool bags. They're waterproof. They're perfect for obstacle races, because like they can sit in the mud and not be a big deal. Anyway, that's my current new Kitbricks. Look it up, Kitbrx. And they're English, so you're probably related to them.
Yeah, obviously, as well as the Queen, you know. All right, John, we come back to you now.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I'm at a loss because I didn't see the questions beforehand. My favorite running product, I mean, how about just my GPS watch? You know,
yeah,
it's awesome. You know, I don't know how I got along without it.
Which one
now
do
I
you
exactly
have?
How far? And how slow I went.
Which one is it that you have?
I have the Garmin 404.
Okay. All right.
I've got the Fenix 3. Yeah. Big fan.
Oh, all right. You have to one up there. Give us the biggest, the newest one of them all. Isn't that the new one?
It's certainly not the newest. Oh. There's no like heart rate sensor.
Oh, okay. Oh, well. Then you better up your game. Okay, anyone listening right now who's never listened to the show before is going to see a different side of me to usual. So,
are you usually like all serious or usually all business?
I'm not serious. With someone, I was very relaxed and like this, but for the most part, I'm kind of calm. Anyway, Terry, what is your favorite running product?
I'm a little bit more of like a Zen runner, so I don't have all the technology stuff. I don't have a Garmin. The newest thing I just got is I jumped on the Hoka train and bought a pair of Hoka trail runners. When I did my first 50, I saw a bunch of people who were way older than me running in those. And I made the mistake of running in street shoes. And I did Leadville, which is not a friendly course.
Oof.
So, I learned and I bought a pair of Hoka Mafates and I'm breaking those in right now and kind of trying to get used to them. But yeah, that's kind of my new toy for now.
Yeah.
New shoes.
Yeah, that worked out well. That's the most important thing, or one of, for anything.
You just ran Leadville?
I ran Leadville 2 years ago and we're working on, some of our team is going to try to do a 100-miler coming up. So, trying to learn from Leadville's Leadville 50 and try to do better for the 100.
I think you should train and run double the amount for a 200-mile race. And then, John, you should allow Terry to be the first one-man show of the Bourbon Chase.
I don't know if his crew can stay up that long. It might take a long time.
We actually each year usually have at least one or two requests from some individual that wants to run the entire event by himself. And we just say no.
Well, I guess you have to. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been a lot of fun. And I will put lots of links to all your websites so people can keep up to date and, you know, find what they want to find. So thank you for your time. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wasn't that fun? I apologize if you wanted a more serious podcast, but these events are all about having fun out there, and that was what today was all about. So thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this unique event special episode. This one was not a request like most of the others, but I thought it'd be something fun to do, and I had fun. I hope you did too. If you do have any suggestions for me or any thoughts on anything we've talked about today, I'd love to hear from you. My email is tina@runnersconnect.net. Or you can also tweet at me @TinaMuir. Oh, and by the way, if you could share this podcast with your friends, your family, on your Facebook, on your Twitter, wherever you are enjoying this podcast, I really, really, really would be so grateful. So thank you for that. If you're joining us as a new listener, I hope you will consider subscribing to receive future episodes right to your device every Wednesday morning. And maybe Friday mornings if I increase the episodes to 2 times a week. I'm still looking forward to hearing your feedback about that, whether you would want 2 episodes a week. Next week, we will be talking to Mary Wittenberg, who is the former president and CEO of the New York Roadrunners. She has been an incredible asset to the running world and just has made so many changes in such a short amount of time. So I really think a lot of you are going to get a lot from that, and I hope you will tune in next week to find out. So until next time, have a great week.